Good afternoon, you're very welcome to today's edition of Saturday with Clare Byrne. On today's programme, saved by new politics, was it just the precarious government numbers that saved John Halligan's job? After a tumultuous 2 weeks, Leo's big speech, we'll have a look at how his first leader's address went down. Cut the dole for the long-term unemployed, the Republic of Opportunity document is published, and what is an affordable house? All this and more to come over the next hour, but first the news now with Christopher McKevitt. Christopher, thank you very much. This is Saturday with Clare Byrne. You're very welcome to the programme. Joining us today from the Fine Gael Party Conference, we've Minister Richard Bruton. Here in our Dublin studio, Dara O'Brien, Fianna Fáil TD and spokesperson on foreign affairs, Eoghan O'Brien, Sinn Féin TD and housing spokesperson, Michael Fitzmaurice, Independent TD, Niamh Harrigan, Head of Department of Sociology at UCC, and Gerard Howland is also with us, political analyst and columnist with The Examiner. Minister Bruton, I'm going to start with you and we'll talk about the Republic of Opportunity and the publication of your document there in Cavan in just a moment. But first of all, John Halligan is your junior minister in education. Did you speak to him at all? Did you advise him over what to do, in particular in relation to the Workplace Relations Commission ruling this week?
No, I wasn't speaking to him. He, as you know, he is in Thailand on a trade mission. But I think John has recognised that what he did was wrong. It was wholly inappropriate. Such questions shouldn't be asked of any person in an interview. I think he's recognised that. He has accepted his responsibilities and is going to deal with the payments. This has gone to the WRC and they've made an appropriate ruling. But I think, to be fair to John, if you were to pick someone out who's strong on workers' rights, John is such a person. To be fair to him, this was a fall from his own high standards, because I have worked with him often on issues around workers, particularly related to Waterford, where, you know, it has been a struggle to rebuild the economy in Waterford, and he has been a big part of that. So this was a lapse by John, which he has recognised, and he has dealt with it, and I think it's now time to move on.
Okay, well, it's a very serious lapse, and I wonder whether you'd agree that Fine Gael is compromising standards because of the numbers that you're dealing with in Dáil Éireann and the layout of the government at the moment, that in any other circumstance John Halligan would be gone.
No, by no means. I think there's nothing got to do with dollar arithmetic. This is something where we as TDs have to recognise that we are employers as well. And it shows that there's an onus on everyone to understand employment law. John should have known better. This was a mistake, but it was not a hanging offence.
And the thing is, he did know better because he preceded his question with the words, "I shouldn't ask you this, but." So he did know better.
And he shouldn't have asked that question. And I think the WRC have rightly found him at fault, and he has accepted that he is at fault and he is going to take the consequences. But in terms of his political career, I think he continues to have a huge amount to contribute. He's doing really valuable work, both between my own department in education and the Department of Enterprise. And, you know, he's pioneering work in areas like apprenticeship, which is vital for the long-term future. And I think he has accepted that this was a lapse from standards that should be upheld. But from my point of view and from the point of view of the government, it's not a grounds for trying to end his political career.
Okay, despite the Workplace Relations Commission making that finding, I'm just wondering if anyone around the table wants to come in on that. Niamh, you're an employer, I assume, as head of department in UCC. What do you think?
Well, I suppose the bigger issue for me, and it has actually been linked into the broad spectrum of issues around the Independent Alliance that have emerged in the last couple of weeks, including the proposed trip to North Korea, is that essentially the Taoiseach is not only, you know, head of the cabinet, but he's the line manager of the cabinet, essentially. And part of a line manager's job is to essentially manage what's going on, to create a narrative. And it, you know, while this is a coalition of sorts and he has to do that within Fine Gael, he actually has to do it within the whole cabinet. The whole cabinet are actually what govern the country. And I think we've really seen a kind of an unravelling in the last couple of weeks. And I know the Taoiseach yesterday, or last night in his speech, was, I thought, very nice and deferential, really, almost to members of the Independent Alliance, considering really what could have come out of that North Korean visit. I mean, it's been a hilarious week on social media, and that's all great fun. But it was actually a very dangerous thing to propose.
Well, it'd be funny,
and I think it has to be taken seriously in that.
Sorry,
it'd be funny if it wasn't so serious. I think the North Korean thing, it's been an awful couple of weeks for the Independent Alliance. I think people would say that, like, particularly when you look at Minister Ross, as senior minister at cabinet, when we're hopefully toward the end of the industrial action in Irish Rail, but I don't think the minister can claim any credit whatsoever for that. He was effectively a spectator. And then even to think that three senior ministers of government would actually have this idea that they could, you know, offer some assistance to North Korea and actually travel over, and that the public reaction wouldn't be so, is just crazy. And then when you have a situation with John Halligan, I heard the interview yesterday on Sean O'Rourke, and I think that nearly made the situation, like, he's definitely contrite, he's definitely sorry about it, and he did say, you know, look, this was a very bad error of judgment, he shouldn't have asked the question.
This was about the Workplace Relations Commission.
Yeah, sorry, about the Workplace Relations Commission.
But on the North Korea issue, I felt that if he were given the opportunity
Oh, sorry, I agree, because he was still saying, he kind of said, still left out there being some chance of going. And I'm not sure whether he's overstated his own importance. Maybe he thinks this, you know, he can actually do something in North Korea. And if he does, well, then I think we should be really, really worried.
Michael Fitzmaurice, you were a member of the Independent Alliance. How do you feel about John Halligan and what's happened?
Well, has happened over the last couple of weeks, you'd swear that there was a full moon for 2 weeks with what has gone on. First of all, in what he said when he was interviewing the person, I think in fairness, there's no venom in John Halligan that way. I think what he'd done was awkward. I think it was ill-advised. Shouldn't have done it. Paying the price, deserves to pay the price. There is no doubt about that. Deserves to pay the price. It's not a sackable offence. It probably in the long term will put a lot of people, you know, the way he done it, if a person was interviewing someone and said, would you have a difficulty at being working awful long hours or weekends or that? That's how you can ask the question. Do you know what I mean? Because people may be tied up at other things. But he didn't do that. But he's paying the price. And I think that precedent is set now for everyone. Not alone a minister, but I think as well senior civil servants, if they do something wrong, they need to be as quick off the mark as well. Second of all, in the line of this wild idea of going to Korea, I don't know what world they're in. To be honest about it, there's three of them that seems to be gone wild. In fairness to the likes of Boxer and Sean Kenny, Boxer is, when there was problems in Donegal or when there was problems in Cork, he's a grafter. You know, okay, he mightn't do everything that I want him to do. I argue with him day in, day out, wanting to get jobs done. But in fairness to him, he's bread and butter stuff. And so would Kenny be. And I think if they look inwards into themselves, I wouldn't be associated with the wild cowboy stuff that the other three are at.
All right, we're going to move on from that. But just a final comment, Richard Bruton, from you. Michael said that three members of the Independent Alliance have run wild. Do you agree?
Well, look, the way I look at this, North Korea is a dictatorship. It is a deplorable record in human rights. It's acting in a very aggressive way towards a democratic country, South Korea. We should have no truck with them. The Minister for Foreign Affairs sets out Ireland's policy, and that has to be observed. And I think the independents have recognised that.
Okay, let's talk now about the Fine Gael Party conference. And most people, I think, around the table would have seen Leo Varadkar's speech last night, which was televised live on RTE television. Eoin O'Brien, you must have been devastated. No mention of Sinn Féin.
I was obviously very sad. I actually didn't watch it last night because I was having my dinner, so I didn't want to get indigestion, but I watched it all back this morning on Facebook. I mean, obviously, it's impossible not to be biased as a member of another political party, but if you try to stand back and be a little bit objective, first of all, on the delivery, it was incredibly underwhelming, incredibly wooden, almost kind of over-rehearsed, like when certain words had to be said, hand movements had to be moved in particular ways. And in fact, even the applause for most of the speech seemed scripted. It was almost like it was choreographed. The substance, of course, was what you'd expect, nothing new. Fine Gael is clearly the party of privilege, and there was nothing that Leo Varadkar said last night that would suggest otherwise. I mean, I think it's interesting in a sense that he was continually in a state of denial. He said that the housing crisis can be solved. They have a plan. It's working at a time when all of the indicators are showing it's not. More children and homelessness, house prices going up, rents going up, people not being able to afford homes despite the fact that the Taoiseach thinks that an affordable home is a home priced
$320 or $330. We're going to talk about that.
So I think what you got is a very underwhelming first performance. And I think he's going to be somewhat damaged by it, both among the public, but also among even his own party.
Okay, but did it take the wind out of your sails that there was no mention of Sinn Féin, no insults thrown your way, nothing to react against? Because that was probably the aim.
No, in fact, there's lots to react against in the sense that the types of policies that Fine Gael has been implementing for 6 years that are causing so much hardship in people's lives are going to continue. That's the debate that we want to have. Whether he attacks Sinn Féin or not, that's really immaterial to us. For us, this is about politics. Okay. It's about health, housing, childcare, the economy, the North, the European Union. And on all of those things, so we got more of the bland.
So the Fine content
Gael, the same.
Didn't do it for you. Dara O'Brien, Fianna Fáil got a nice pat on the head.
Yeah, well, we're not really interested in pats on the head, certainly from Leo or from Fine Gael or anyone else. I think, look, the one thing, let's recognise the fact it was his first, you know, and I'm sure there was an element of nerves with that. It should have been an opportunity for him to outline his stall on behalf of his government as to what Fine Gael would do. It was so light on any type of policy. It skirted over housing, skirted over homelessness. And actually, the interesting thing, when you look at it, it was hardly got a mention in the speech. When you look at the agenda for the national conference, there's no homelessness on it. There's no housing on it. There's no health on it, on their own agenda. And that just shows you, and I think a lot of what it's about is an obsession with image about how things look. And I think people will make up their own mind. Look, I'm a Fianna Fáil TD, I'm in the opposition. But if anyone who was going to look at it and say, what did they learn from it about government policy, about how we're going to tackle massive issues in health, nearly 700,000 people on waiting lists. I'll be finished in a second. How they're going to tackle the desperate scourge of homelessness and child homelessness. There was nothing in it. Nothing. It was all about Leo.
I actually don't quite agree on the fact that there wasn't on an idea, because I think what we're seeing here, Dara, is neoliberal Leo, neoliberal Fine Gael. And this is a speech that David Cameron could have made, actually. It's a speech that Theresa May, as Home Secretary before she became Prime Minister.
That's probably even greater criticism of the speech that you've just given there. Because, absolutely.
I was actually looking at the stats this morning for the original leadership election. And Leo, to me, he did come across as quite nervous and a little bit less relaxed, perhaps, than we would have seen him in other contexts. And I was looking, actually, that, you know, if you look at the stats when he was elected, because he won overwhelmingly with the parliamentary party, slightly with local TDs, but actually in the ordinary party membership, Simon won quite convincingly. So I suppose this was a very tough audience for him. But leaving all of that aside, Claire, what we did see was this, first of all, continuous emphasis on workers, rewarding work, opportunity for work, welfare support for people who work, tax cuts for people who work. So there was this tremendous emphasis as a value on working. Now, that's not necessarily a bad thing. However, if we look at some of the more concrete proposals that are emerging this morning, and I suppose this is where, I think to pick up about what Dara and Owen were saying, if you take like the proposal that has emerged this morning around the idea of linking long-term job seeker benefit to your social insurance contributions, okay, models like that have been done all over Europe, all over the Western world, where neoliberal approaches, labour activation has been, undertaken. There's a debate to be had about that. But to propose a policy like that in the context of the housing crisis that we have right now is really problematic.
Okay, can I bring the Minister back in on that? Because you're in charge of this document, Richard Bruton, isn't that correct? You're presenting it today to the party and you've spoken to lots of members and asked for their ideas. Tell us about this proposal that's in there about linking the dole or jobs seeker's allowance to the amount of work you've previously done in your lifetime.
Well, firstly, let me say, this is about looking 10 years ahead. And to suggest that Leo is light on policy, this is a very detailed policy roadmap. And it's looking at a really important issue, because twice in my lifetime, I've seen opportunities like we have now that's been built painfully by Irish people, squandered by bad politics. I've seen that twice. This is now about planning for the long term. So it's not going to be the easy things. The vanity projects are bowing to vested interests that will dominate. These are looking at long-term challenges. And I dispute hotly what Niamh is suggesting. This policy paper sets out opportunity at its heart. So it's about breaking down barriers for people with a disadvantage, to see progress for people where parts of our city have less than 1% going to higher education. This is about breaking down those barriers, changing all of the face of that.
Right,
this is about a new social contract that will support families, right throughout their lives, from that early moment when a child is born and people are worried, maybe has this child got some sort of a special need, getting that access to that early identification and early intervention, right through to their later stages in life when they worry about, can I remain independent in my home and have those supports?
Okay, is there a proposal in there to get award less job seekers allowance to someone who's long-term unemployed?
There's a proposal to do what we used to do, and this was abolished some years ago, that there would be a pay-related element in social insurance, so that if you became unemployed and you'd contributed for many years and you had had a certain standard of living, that part of the social insurance which you paid in over those years on the basis of that income would give you some sort of a safety net for a period. So pay-related benefit, I mean, this is pay-related social insurance we're talking about. That was the origin of it. So there is a pay-related element there that used to be there in the 80s, and this is about bringing it back.
But it's addressing the problem of long-term unemployed. Is that not how you would see it?
This is about giving people who contribute in for many years some more support from the social insurance fund.
What about the people who need assistance now, Richard? What about the thousands of people who are homeless?
Precisely,
what about the 700,000 people on public waiting lists for hospital procedures, you know, that doubled in the time when Leo himself was health minister? Why no mention of this? Like, why no?
Are you back to the speech now?
Yeah, absolutely. But the speech is...
Yeah, no,
did you make of the criticisms, Richard Bruton, of the speech that you've heard here today? It was wooden, it was flat, it was light on policy.
Well, I think... I've been listening to criticisms of Leo saying that he's all style and no substance. Now the very people who offered those criticisms are saying we are obsessing about style. Yeah. It's just so ironic that, you know, when we produce a 45-page document setting out a strategy and a roadmap for the long-term future, and we're now talking about sitting down with the public so they can intervene and refine and help us develop the right strategies for the future, that people are talking about style and whether he was wooden.
Can I bring
the political level of some people are?
I want to bring
this is about the long term future of the country.
Gerard Howland in here, who has some considerable experience of events that we witnessed last night. How many leader speeches were you involved in writing for Fianna Fáil?
About 8 or 9, I think.
Okay, so you know what that's like. What was your view last night?
Well, he wasn't comfortable with the autocue, so as performance, it didn't work. And the autocue, by the way, is extremely difficult to master, and it's overlain with another constraint, which because it's live on television, you must go on air at a certain moment. You're depending on your warmer upper to warm up and get off stage at a moment. And you must end at a particular moment, regardless how much applause there has been, so that you're not still talking when RT goes to the ads. So for all of those reasons, as performance, it's actually quite challenging. But I think Owen O'Brien, kicking off the discussion, told us all we need to know. And I have to second what he said. He didn't watch it last night, neither did I. I watched it on Facebook this morning too. So as events, these auditions are simply not particularly important, and however it was performed or wasn't won't matter very much. Mm. What will matter a lot more in a year's time or more, whenever there is an election, I think it will be longer rather than sooner, is what people think about the competence of the people in government and of their policies. And I think from a Fine Gael perspective, Niamh summed it up very aptly, but not in the way she perhaps intended. She said it's neoliberal, and that's one way of putting it. The same way of putting it is that Fine Gael has a constituency. They were speaking very effectively to that constituency through these policies that will appeal to those sort of people. It was in Cavan. Fine Gael had 2 seats in Cavan Monaghan before the last election. They had 2 seats in Louth. They had 2 seats in Donegal. They had 2 seats in Sligo Leitrim. They're down to 1 each in those 4 border constituencies. And unless those seats are got back and got back out the votes of people who these policies might well appeal to, they're not going to be in government again. So that's what Fine Gael's business is this weekend, and it'll take some time before we find out whether they're successful in doing it or not.
Okay. But there is a contradiction
Michael, I'll come to you in a moment. You go ahead, Owen, and then I'll come to Michael.
Just briefly, there is a contradiction, however, at the heart of what Richard Bruton is saying, which is, on the one hand, if you're appealing to modest income earners and those people who work, and at the same time, if the impact of your policies on health, on housing and education is to actively disadvantage and hurt those people, then that's not not a political strategy that's going to work. I mean, housing, for example, I know we're going to come back to it, but on the one hand, we're saying, and Leo gave his list of the pennies that he put back in the pockets of modest income earners last night, but when you compare that to the dramatic increases in the cost of rent or the cost of purchasing a home, modest income working families are really hurting at present. And one of the things that worries me is by trying to deflect the attention from the failure of Fine Gael policies for those people by dog whistle attacks, for example, on social welfare claimants, as Leo so infamously did with his Dole Cheats campaign, you end up having a very divisive and a very nasty kind of politics. Now, it was presented much more cleanly last night and in a much more kind of sanitised version. But you can't, on the one hand, say you're standing up for working people, hurt them with the policies that you're proposing, and then continue to stick the knife into the backs of those people who desperately need help at present, whether they're out of work or in emergency accommodation or in hospital trolleys.
Weren't working people told last night you're going to get it? You got a small tax cut this year, you get one next year, the year after, the year after.
This is a really crucial point. Richard Bruton, for example, identified the fact of the low number of children in certain parts of the city going to university after school. If you continue to roll out tax breaks which disproportionately benefit higher earners, you're starving the state of the resources it needs to invest, whether it's in rural Ireland or urban Ireland, health, housing, education or childcare. So you can't have it both ways. In fact, contrary to what Richard Bruton said, they're doing exactly what Fianna Fáil did as we entered into the last period of economic growth. They're promising improved investment and cutting taxes, and you can't do that.
The big difference, Owen, is we invest
Claire,
in
I presume I'm going to get a chance to...
Absolutely, absolutely.
We'll get back to it.
Minister, would you mind? I'm just going to let Michael Fitzmaurice in and then I'm going to give the last word on this to you. So,
The first thing is interesting that for the first time, I think, in a leader's debate or a leader's speech, Sinn Féin wasn't mentioned because generally they'd be taking the head off them. And I think that's maybe looking into the future of who might be needed down the road. That'd be my thinking on that. Second of all, Minister Bruton was talking there about helping people in education and the less well off. The reality of it is there are people within, and be it hotels and in accommodation at the moment, young children that need a lot of help that isn't being moved on fast enough. Second of all, him as minister, when you talk about doing all these things down the road, it's now, at the moment, and for the next year or two, we need to move on and move on rapidly. When you have, say, the funding for national schools, when you need SNAs, and we're going to hear it back from Minister Bruton that he has more of them, but we know the reality. They are now attributed to schools instead of like one time to the child that needed it. And Leo talked about the health service, this new great 10-year plan, promising. We have had Fine Gael in government for the last 7 years. We have now more people waiting for a hospital appointment than ever before. We have a health service that's in disarray. And being honest about it, whoever, regardless of who's in government, whatever they want to promise, unless you change the elephant that's called the HSE, that's the only way you will solve the likes of the health service, because we are throwing money constantly at it and it is not sorting.
All right, I know, Richard Bruton, you have to go soon, but I want to give you an opportunity to respond to some of what you heard over the last couple of minutes.
Yeah, so the first thing I'll say, I remember when I introduced the Action Plan for Jobs in 2012 and people scoffed at the idea that we would deliver 100,000 jobs. We delivered 200,000. And people in those early periods said, look, it's not working. We're not seeing the results. We don't see people back at work yet. But you have to have a plan, and Rebuilding Ireland is a plan for housing, and it is working. We are seeing a 50% increase in 50% increase in house building. We're planning next year that we'll be building 4,000 social homes. We have in our strategy said there will be 25% social housing in our strategy in the long term. We also are very clear in respect of health in our strategy. Access to health is going to be based on need, not on income. And that's a very clear statement to people on modest income. And let me say what we're saying about tax. We're saying that it's not fair that someone who's below average wage is paying tax at the top rate, nearly paying 50% of their pay on below average wage. That's not a tenable situation if you want to build a strong economy. And Leo said very clearly, we will lift that level at which people
so
hit
detached
that,
from
that
the reality
rate
of what's
up,
happening
up.
Right now. They don't those get the fact are the,
those are the solid. Those are the
those are the
solid platforms that we're building for the long term. And I won't take lectures from Fianna Fáil when we had these opportunities in the past, you took a wrong line and you made
you're just detached from the reality mistakes. Of the situation.
So
at the
we
moment.
Are taking, we are making sure that it's that never happens again by taking a 10-year view for the future. Well,
Fine Gael this week has talked about the average house price being 313,000, and then you talk about the amount of people you're taking out in the lower threshold of tax. I will tell you one thing: you'd want to be earning a long time before you could afford a house at 313,000 at the figures you're on about taking people out of tax.
Okay,
but aren't we right to say that
right to
a person
out,
on
but,
less than the average wage shouldn't be paying at over 50% or nearly 50%?
You seem to be removed from reality.
Okay,
Richard,
we're going to talk about housing in a moment, Michael. But just
very real. You talk to people on less than the average wage and ask them, is it fair that they're paying nearly 50% in their tax, and they'll tell you an answer.
Respond to that point.
I am fully in favour of taking as many people as you can out of the tax threshold.
But how do you pay for all of the things you want to fix then?
Because they actually higher earners is what needs to be taxed more, but they're not doing that. What has happened in this country is that the higher earners got the same and even more in their pocket than the lower earners. And that's what has happened all along. And
in the last budget, you mean?
Go back through the years and look at what has happened. And the reality of it is that if we don't look after the people in Middle Ireland, have a look at the number. He talked about the number of people back at work. Have a look at the number of people that's on FIS. Have a look at what they are earning. We have more people at work. Correct. 100% right. But what are they earning? That's what we
need
to look at.
The issue is priorities. And if
they're earning
say,
good pay. You see that the average rate of pay has increased.
The issue, though, is what government decide to prioritise. And I was watching Peter McVerry's his tweets last night as the conference was going on. Since Leo took over as Taoiseach himself, 2,000 more people are homeless. Okay, and whatever the minister says, the government are detached from the reality of the situation, that we have an absolute crisis in this area. You can look 10 years down the line all you want, Richard, with your cabinet colleagues. You've got to act now on issues that are affecting people. Kids living in hotels, going to schools, your Minister for Education, changing into their uniforms
in
hotels.
We're rebuilding the social housing programme. The social housing program is being rebuilt. It doesn't happen overnight. Last year there were 700 built. This year there'll be 2,000 built. Next year that'll double again. So that will be trebling in 2017, doubling again in 2018. And we have pledged that the 25% of housing will be social housing in the long term. So we are putting in place a system that will support a balanced housing solution. And that's really important for the long term.
Okay, we've got to leave it there.
One thing. Can I just say one thing?
Really brief.
I'll give you one example. Do we give ex-ministers and TDs 5,000 or 6,000 extra, which is about a third of what some people is earning in total? This is where we need to start looking at things.
Okay. All right. Minister Richard Bruden, thank you for joining us from the Fine Gael Party Conference in Cavan. We're going to be back after the break talking about housing, which it seems everybody wants to have a word about. So we'll see you after this quick break. Just a reminder of who we have on the programme: Dara O'Brien, Fianna Fáil, Eoghan O'Brien, Sinn Féin, Michael Fitzmaurice, Independent TD, Dr Niamh Harrigan from UCC, and Gerard Howlan, who is a columnist with The Examiner and a former senior political advisor. Now, the Minister for Housing, Eoghan Murphy, was on with Sean O'Rourke yesterday, and he said that affordable houses are being built.
When we were out earlier in the week in the Taoiseach's constituency, where you could buy homes for a family home for less than €300,000. As an individual, you could buy an apartment for around €240,000. So there are homes being built at affordable prices. But I recognise in my job that we have a role here and a function here as a government to make sure that we can help people aspire to home ownership.
€300,000, Eoghan O'Brien. Affordable?
Well, first of all, the homes that they're talking about in Hansfield out in Fingal are between €319,000 and €395,000. So that's the current price for those developments. And I raised this with the Taoiseach in Leaders' Questions on Wednesday, and he made two startling admissions. The first thing, as he said, is the government has no definition of affordable housing. And on that basis, he also then went on to say that they have no targets for delivering directly or facilitating the delivery of affordable housing next year. And the problem is this: there is a cohort of people, individuals or families, they earn somewhere between €40,000 and €80,000 a year. And they are being priced out of the rental and home purchase markets. They're above the thresholds for social housing and they can't get a mortgage. And affordable under the central bank's lending rules means the prices have to be between €170,000 and €260,000. There are virtually no new houses in Dublin, anywhere in Dublin, that come close to that price. If you go to some of the urban centres, even parts of Cork and Galway and Limerick, you're seeing prices way above. And the reason is this: government is going to spend over 3 years, 1.1 billion in incentivizing the development of private homes through a range of schemes. None of those schemes include anything that delivers or guarantees affordability at that range. And this goes back to the point I was making about Leo's speech and Richard's comments earlier. You can't say you're standing up for working people, people who earn between 40 and 80,000 euros as a household, and at the same time expect people to buy houses at that price. And Leo Varadkar stood outside the houses in Hansfield. There were social houses on one side and the private house on the other. And the prices of those private houses is between 320 and 390. And he described them as affordable. That's why his party is the party of privilege, not of the average working family.
You checked, did you, how much you'd need to be on to service a mortgage of that size?
I actually talked to a guy that's running a credit union on my way up. And he said a family, they would have to be earning an 80 grand to get, the figure I use is 313,000, they need to be earning an 80 grand. And we have to just bring this into context, because first of all, 80 grand is generally two people working in the house. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing. The second thing is, if a couple were together, we looked at what China done, they were trying to prevent them having children. But if you look, if one person was having a child, and obviously the rate of income goes down, well, they wouldn't be able to afford it. And then down the road, and this is the other part that needs to be looked at, those same people, when they, if the children come along and they go to college, are not entitled to any grant in the college, nothing. And they are paying out another 18 grand.
So the issue
in this is, I know that this 500 acres has been earmarked around the country by the Department of Environment of Housing. Now, some of that will be used for social housing, and that's fine. But we should also target houses for people caught in what I call Middle Ireland. And being honest, if a government was shrewd, or any of us here, if we were given land, you can price a house at 140 euro, that's fairly dear price. You can get it sometimes between 100 and 110 a square metre. And if you do that, you will end up with the house that will be affordable. And in my opinion, once you go over 200,000, you are putting that person, that the two people that's earning between 40 grand each, 80 grand, you are putting them into danger of down the road, if anything goes wrong, of losing their house.
And also,
depends where you are in the country. Niamh, go ahead.
First of all, I mean, the construction industry would have their own view on what's an affordable house to buy. But the piece of the puzzle that's actually missing here on one part is, if we look at Leo's speech last night, and he talked about these, you know, people entering the higher threshold for tax, and we had a lot of talk in the last budget around that 33,000 threshold, which is a really important one. But actually, if you look at average and median incomes in Ireland, which are coming in under around 40 grand. You look at the central bank rules around mortgages, right? And if you put that whole jigsaw together, what you're actually coming up with is a budget of about 210,000, somewhere in around that, to buy a house. So the figures as they crunch down just don't fit. But I suppose the bigger issue here for me, Claire, is that there's not just a focus here. Like the benefit, as Owen says, of taking people at that strata, is that getting them affordable homes, is that you're taking them out of the rental sector. And then the rental sector is freed up for so many of the more marginal, vulnerable families and individuals who are being totally squeezed out. I launched a report for Cork Simon this week, and their big problem, they have had to open their day centre to night sleepers, which was never designed to you, just to get people out of the cold. And their big problem at the moment is that they are seeing people trapped now in their hostels and emergency accommodation, whereas 10 years ago they would have got out of them and into normal rented accommodation. And the problem is, A, those people are trapped on the streets and trapped in Simon, but B, those places are not available to anybody else who's vulnerable, who's coming onto the streets. So there's a knock-on benefit to the much wider sector of taking these people out.
Okay, Gerard Howland, I'll come to you, and then I'll come back to you,
Darren. You're talking about a 300,000 euro house where one can be found. The first thing you need is a 30,000 euro deposit, at least 10%. Now, in this rental market, saving after you've paid for your rent, 30,000 euro is some benchmark. But leaving that aside, there's something we haven't come to in the conversation about what is an affordable house. Because an affordable house, whatever the figure is, really means people buying houses which they then have as their own capital, which they then hope to have really as their underlying wealth for many decades to come. Hence, my house is worth 400,000 or 500,000 or 600,000. So somehow, mystically, I'm very wealthy. That was the foundation of the last bubble. What we haven't had, except on the fringes and occasionally, is really serious policy talk about different models of housing. I'm thinking particularly not just of social housing, but of cooperative housing.
Well, look at this O'Coolan Co-Housing Alliance in Dublin.
Which is a really excellent model. And people in the cooperative housing model, they're buying these houses at cost. Yes, they have
30% under market value.
Correct.
Three-bed home starting at 160,000 in Ballymun, but that is the only scheme of its kind.
And here's what's crucial about it. O'Coolan is a really good model. Those houses are being sold from 160 to 225,000. Yeah. What's crucial about them, however, is it's a partnership between O'Coolan and Dublin City Council, where the council services the site and provides the land at a reasonable price. And O'Coolan sell the house on to regular people who buy the houses with their own private finance at just above the cost of producing it. So what that tells us is there is nothing stopping local authorities, either on their own or working with cooperative housing bodies and approved housing bodies, delivering homes in that scale. But here's the crunch. Owen Murphy has announced a paltry €15 million for next year to support those kind of schemes. Yet at the same time, he announces €750 million to assist private sector developers to build private homes. So that shows you they're not interested in investing the kinds of funds
as we're
to deliver
this
these
conversation,
schemes.
I'm acutely aware that we do not have Fine Gael in the room to defend this, so I want to be fair to them.
These are the facts. So you can't, on the one hand, say that we want affordable housing and not fund the type of schemes which today people are able to live in at affordable prices.
Before you start now, remember Leo's speech last night. He said Fianna Fáil were great, great relationship.
Fianna Fáil are keeping them in power.
Let's not ruin the relationship here.
Fianna Fáil supported the budget that doesn't have funding for affordable housing either. So explain that to us, Darragh.
Owen, I tell you what, right? The last group I'm going to take a lecture from about budget and budgetary policy is Sinn Féin. Because your party...
Of course, because you take lectures from Fine Gael all the time.
I tell you, because
it's their budget you support,
because your party, Owen, in the north, when you had a finance minister, Martin O'Mullor, has now brought about direct rule in the north and a Westminster budget because you walked away when you actually had a chance to do something. So don't lecture me.
Tell us about your
economics.
Support for Fine Gael's affordable housing budget.
I want to talk about housing because my party has delivered housing over the years. Your party delivered
nothing.
You created
this housing
because
crisis,
because when you,
you
when,
created the housing
when
crisis,
Owen, you had an opportunity,
that Fine Gael has made it worse.
When you had an opportunity to get involved, you walked away. You
affordable
walked away as
the
people in the north.
Stick to the subject, Darragh. Come on.
Do you want to keep heckling me? Is that what you want to do? Because I tell you what the problem is, you won't deliver affordable housing if you don't have an affordable housing scheme. And that's fundamentally what's missing. When affordable housing was delivered in conjunction with local authorities in private and public estates in the 90s and into 2000s, in schemes...
No, actually, 50% of those people are now in
mortgage arrears because I've obviously hit a nerve with you because you keep interrupting me. So will you be quiet for a minute?
Your shared ownership schemes were disastrous.
Just let him make his point, Owen, and then let him make his point.
Sorry, Owen. In my area in Dublin, Fingal, that you referred to in Hansfield, I can refer to housing estates in Swords, in Malahide, in Rush, Lusk and Skerries, where there are people living in homes now, affordable homes that were delivered under previous affordable housing schemes.
And 50% that is, of them
sorry,
are in mortgage
sorry,
distress
Owen,
in
shut
your
up for a second, will you? Because
50%,
to be honest with you,
Darragh.
To be honest with you, that is actually what's missing in the whole strategy, because no one's defining what affordable is. Now, if you have a scheme in place, and government can and should deliver a scheme where you define affordability, do you define it on the basis of 40% of net take-home pay is the mortgage repayment, and you allow a plus or minus factor on it? You've got to look as well at building social housing. And where this government has failed, and the previous one, by the way...
Fianna Fáil stopped building social housing.
No, actually, do you know what, Claire?
Years ago. Sorry, the
figures do not bear that out.
They do.
Seriously, right? The figures don't bear that out at all.
He's trying to annoy you, Darren.
He's actually doing quite well. But he's doing quite well, in fairness to him. Because you see, this is the thing with Sinn Féin.
When they can't
actually stand over the fact that they've walked away from their responsibility that they've had to their electorate, all they will actually do is attack.
Okay, enough from you two. Michael Fitzmaurice, no, stop. Michael, go on, go ahead.
We have to think of the people in the bracket, I think, from something like 40k up to 80k, because these are the people that's caught in a rut. And if you listen to the figures, and I was just it up there. I was saying 120, 140 a square foot. That if you listen to the figures you've given, so long as the site is supplied, you're on the money in what you're saying. So, but there is one problem. A long time ago as well, there was a partnership between councils and the person in an affordable house. I know people, and people have come to me lately. I'm not saying it didn't deliver a lot of houses. What I'm seeing is there are people now that are paying for years that are as badly off now as nearly the first day they went in. And there's... they will never attain to own the house. But I think what needs to be done with the amount of land that's paid for by government in a crisis, it is there. The land is there. It is earmarked at the moment. I know that there are probably about 500 acres around the country. We need to set aside enough of it to make sure that we give these people in that threshold the opportunity to get a life. Because what we are doing is we are leaving them in the rental sector that is putting pressure on people that are on even
Niamh made
wages.
That point. But Ronan in Galway has been on to us. He's texted us and he said, why is Michael Fitzmaurice pontificating about policies when he had the chance to enter government and influence policies? He stayed on the sidelines.
I will answer him back fairly quick. I think vindicated myself when you look at the last week, what has happened. And on top of that, Michael Fitzmaurice stood by the principles that he put in front of the people and will always do that.
Well, the other area, Claire, that I think hasn't been opened up enough in light particularly of the Pubble report this week, which talked about particularly, because the danger always with the housing conversation is that it could be very Dublin focused, and actually not only is there a massive housing and homelessness crisis in other Irish cities, sure, but there are in small towns as well. And to a certain extent, what hasn't been opened up is the way in which spending particularly on infrastructure and roads could actually create new areas where affordable housing could be built and built appropriately and could open up and again take some of the pressures and take some of the pressure off Dublin, which is itself bursting at the seams, I think.
And one thing very quickly, if there's a will to do it, it can be done. And in relation to social housing, if you look back between 07 and 11, there were 15,000 social housing units built in that period.
Local authority
only
waiting lists continue to rise every single year.
I can't hear the two of you. Gerard Howland, can you speak, please?
One of the issues, and there are several strands to housing, it is complex, is transport. There is no solution to the housing crisis without a transport policy.
I agree.
Now, let's wait and see what the capital plan holds in December. The new Lewis in Dublin opens in a few weeks. The next big sort of public infrastructure transport issue to open, with all going well, will be in 2027.
Metro North. Yeah.
No, I understand there was a lost decade, but this will be counted in lost opportunity to open up land banks. You can't have people in houses where they can't get to work and do their business and live. And you can't have a housing policy without a land use policy. You cannot have a land use policy.
Claire, I think one other thing that needs to be noted is that we have probably about 4,000 council houses around the country that actually they haven't they have no system in place to get a council house that is left vacant up and running quick. There is a major problem.
In fairness to government, actually most of those houses have now been brought back into stock, but the key thing is this: we have to get away from thinking about affordable houses as increasing families' access to debt like under the old schemes, and we have to bring down the cost of renting and buying. That's crucial.
Let's talk about Brexit after this break. It's fascinating things happening with the Brexit question, because Leo Varadkar said yesterday that Northern Ireland does not have to remain part of the European single market but could abide by some of their rules, whatever that might mean. Now, the DUP has a huge problem with this because, as you can imagine, if Northern Ireland shares a customs union with the Republic and is also part of the single market while the rest of the UK is not, is that the first step towards a united Ireland?
Well, all along, Claire, I think the whole issue with Brexit would be that it might unravel the union. I mean, that has been clear both from the Scottish and the Northern Ireland vote essentially not to leave. And as they get closer and closer to their crazy self-imposed deadline when they triggered this whole thing, the lack of options in terms of not breaking up the union and trying to do some kind of job on leaving with some dignity and some organisation looks increasingly less likely to happen. It was very interesting actually to look at Nicola Sturgeon in the last 2 days in the run-up to the British-Irish Council meeting in Jersey, talking about the way that she feels that she's been completely kept in the dark around the Brexit negotiations, that they're not on the front line of what's going on at all. And all along, essentially, there actually has been quite, I think, a consistent message coming from both the EU and from Ireland, which is that there has to be some kind of a matching, essentially, of what's going on in Northern Ireland and what's going on in the South.
Or it's a hard border. At least now we know what we can see very clearly, probably for the first time, what the options are.
Well, it is. Yeah. It's stark. And I think you see the next month, this month is crucially important because the EU 27 have to agree that enough progress has been made to go to future relations. Now, if we can't get to a stage whereby, you know, reciprocal citizens' rights between the EU and Britain the divorce settlement, which it's known as, and the situation with regard to the North. If those elements can't be agreed, imagine how difficult it would actually be to agree new trading relations. It is extremely serious right now. And I think one of the things that we have seen in Britain is kind of a softening of where they're going, in the sense that they're talking about extending transitionary arrangements, staying in the customs union for a transitionary period, a single market. And I think it's becoming, they're becoming aware now, what they're looking for is probably is impossible to deliver. But in the meantime, it's us, it's Ireland North and South, who's genuinely in the firing line on this. And my concern, to make a political point, is that we doesn't seem to be a strategy that if there's a cliff, so say for argument's sake, the worst happens this month, and they say, all bets are off. They're gone in March 2019. Now, don't see that happening, but we've got to be able to protect sectors that need it. And without really getting Owen's goat up at this stage, it is crucially important, and it is disgraceful, that the North isn't represented at all, mm-hmm. that we don't have an assembly or an executive in place. I know there are some local reasons for that as well, and Owen will expound upon them. But can you imagine, like, you have the North, 55% of people voting to remain with no say. They're not even
at the meeting yesterday.
They weren't even at the meeting. And, you know, that is a horrendous situation to have.
Oh,
and
no,
the people in the North have been let down unbelievably by Sinn Féin and the DUP.
Well, first of all, I think this issue is too important for Fianna Fáil and Sinn Féin to be playing party politics. We want the Assembly re-established.
It's too important not to have an Assembly.
Absolutely. Mm. And we, of all people, know that and the people we represent in the North. And that's why we need Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael to do more in conjunction with Sinn Féin to get the deal required back online.
You can't. The British are going to bring a budget forward next week.
You cannot,
Sinn Féin and the DUP can't do a deal.
You cannot. It's not just about Sinn Féin and the DUP. You guys are effectively siding with the DUP in the present situation, because you're allowing them off.
Oh,
the
you've it in your gift
to
do something.
Don't do what you're giving out to him.
I'm just saying, it's in their gift to sort it.
I don't mind Dara interrupting me. There's a set of agreements already in place. The DUP are in breach of those. And what we need is all of the other parties who signed up to those agreements, the Fresh Start Agreement and the St Andrews Agreement, to insist that they are honoured. There is no local issue here. These are agreements we all signed up to.
In fairness, Owen, I mean, nobody envisaged, I think, at the time, the scenario that we have now, which is that the DUP are in coalition with the Tories. And the Tories need them desperately.
And
this is where the weakness of the Sinn Féin position has been exposed.
It's not the weakness of the Sinn Féin position. It's the fact that Fianna Fáil and the Irish government continue to allow the DUP and the British government to
vote. Just conscious of time.
They're letting nationalist voters in the North down,
ridiculous.
And they're abandoning the core principles of the Good Friday
Agreement. Jared Howland.
Back in the world of analysis, as a thing from propaganda, the late Dr. Ian Paisley knew a profound truth, which was never to trust the English. That's what the politics of the DUP was founded on and predicated on. But this generation of the DUP have embraced English nationalism. And in doing that, they have a temporary arrangement in Westminster, which by definition can't last. They have imperiled the Union, because that's not a talk of whether or not Scotland will succeed, secede eventually. It is whether that there can be or not a hard border on the island, whether or not Northern Ireland stays in or out of the customs union. But the problem with that is that the Conservative government in Britain cannot agree to having Northern Ireland out of an arrangement that it signs up for without itself collapsing.
And it goes a bit further than that, that if you look at the North-South is obviously crucially important, how we deal on the island, how the Good Friday Agreement is upheld, but also the thousands of jobs underpinned by the East-West, West-East trade between Ireland and Britain itself. Like, we're looking at about €60 billion, which will be affected if Britain, if there is a hard Brexit, if they just leave the customs union, and if it happens overnight.
But in fairness, Dara, people on the inside would say that the Irish government are actually much better planned and organised than the British government are. The problem is that they don't have a plan.
I'm not talking about the Irish government.
And our plans have to be reactive.
I'm talking about
the
reality, what's happening to people right now in the sectors right now.
Yeah, first of all, I think if you look at this over the last 6 months, we're seen to be going backwards in some of the progress that appeared to be made. The European Union representatives and the Tories agreed that Northern Ireland, the Good Friday Agreement, had to be made sure that it was protected, and that Northern Ireland was a special case. And I think that an effort should be made by both of them, plus Leo Varadkar as Taoiseach, to take one piece out of the equation that they're battling about at the moment and secure that. If you look at Cyprus, there are places around Europe that actually have different type of agreements. And I think we should make sure that we protect that. And if it's a no man's land for the time being, to make sure that those special people
just
are
just a quick question, Owen, for you, to finish on. The Sun newspaper said today that Leo Varadkar is now only insisting on Northern Ireland remaining in the single market and customs union following pressure from Gerry Adams. Now, Simon Coveney came out this morning and said this is rubbish. What's your view?
Well, what I'd say is this. You cannot have, on the one hand, the North leaving the customs union, the single market, and avoid a hard border. And up until now, there's been kind of this ambiguous position from the government that somehow you could do both, and you can't. And that's become very, very clear. There is a lot of pressure from a lot of people, including border communities and business communities and political parties and opposition, to say, if the objective is not to have a border, and we're all agreed on that, despite our party differences, then you need some form of special status where the North remains inside the customs union and inside the single market. And what the government needs to do now is say very clearly, unless that's on the table, they will veto moving to the next round.
But the problem for the DUP is, if any of that happens or is attempted by this government in Westminster, that government will collapse.
Okay, our time is up.
Collapse anyway, and the sooner the better, if you ask us.
Thank you all very much for coming in today, Richard Bruton, also for joining us from the Fine Gael Think-In or Party Conference. We're back here next week. Enjoy all of the sport this weekend. Thank you for listening.
Saturday with Claire Byrne was produced by Anne Farrell. The broadcast coordinator was David Phelan. Research was by Leslie Anderson, and Cara O'Hare was on sound.